a lot of times it's the local quality over just these labels that seem really good, but mean seemingly less and less as we move on here. You know what I mean? I feel like it means even less than 10 years ago, like organic's gotten worse almost.
Yeah, for sure. I have a patient who's an organic apple farmer and, okay. Or grower, I guess. I don't know if you farm apples, but either way, he has apple trees in an orchard and he's like, you know, sells the apples. And, he had a really interesting illness, which was actually, he had a mold inside of his body that was coming from the apple trees. And he was just eating like 20 apples a day. And he was just putting in more sugar that was feeding the internal yeast fungal mold and bounce in his body. And once he actually stopped the apples, his fungal issues on his skin and it, that were affecting his brain and causing fatigue went away like within days, which was really crazy.
Hello and welcome to the Health Detective Podcast by Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. We bring you interviews from people who have conquered the trickiest of health challenges using the Functional Diagnostic Nutrition philosophy and similar healing modalities. You're going to hear from experts who have been through the ringer with their health issues and yet managed to come out on the other side. If you're interested in natural healing and or functional medicine, congrats, you are in the right place. You can always visit us at functionaldiagnosticnutrition.com, but for now, here is today's episode. What is going on, my friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Health Detective Podcast by Functional Diagnostic Nutrition. My name is Evan Transu, aka Detective Ev, and I will be your host for today's show. And we have a special guest on today. It's one of the most popular guests in terms of their social media presence that we have ever had on the show. His name is Dr. Bradley Campbell. Perhaps you follow him already, and if you do not, we would highly recommend that. And of course, we will have his Instagram and other links in the show notes so that you can go give him a follow. He's always dropping a ton of knowledge and just actual practical stuff. It's not just a hype Instagram. There's real things there. One of the coolest things that he does that I personally love is he does these morning drives in the convertible where he gives talks with his dog on his way to the office. So you're just going to have to go check those out to see what I mean. But again, they're really cool. Now, the reason my microphone's a little different and it will not be this way in the recording itself, so don't worry. I am currently traveling and I actually do not have my microphone with me. So thankfully, the iPhones nowadays are still pretty good, and it gets the sound out clear enough to be able to do an intro. But I'm going to read his bio, and then we're going to get right to it. Dr. Bradley Campbell is a holistic physician, author, and musician. In college, he majored in pre-med and saxophone performance, and then decided to attend multiple natural medical schools to help people find the true root cause of their problems. Dr. Campbell is currently working on completing 10 postgraduate degrees in natural healthcare. Aside from playing music, he enjoys traveling, water skiing, motorcycling, and spending time with his Irish setter, Albus. This guy's only 32 years old, and the reason I say that is because when you hear how much he has already done with his life and what he's currently doing, it's kind of hard to believe that he did this all before the age of 40. It's pretty impressive stuff. And what's even cooler is not only does he help patients, but he does have his own story too. And I say it that way because typically people on the show do have their own story, but what I have found is if they are doctors, that usually can go 50-50. Sometimes they're just doctors that got into the medical space to help others, like most doctors do, and then they transitioned eventually when they realized the system might not have been serving their clients. But other doctors actually had experiences, and he had two particularly interesting ones. One was one of the craziest things I've ever heard in terms of how fast he healed. So you guys will get to hear all of that and more in today's episode. Without further ado, let's get to it. All right. Hey there, Dr. Campbell. Thanks so much for being here with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
This is a nice change of pace. Listen, you know how it is in the functional world. We get, it's like a very women-dominated space. And I love interviewing all these women, but it is very nice to have some, we got some bearded men here today, younger guys, testosterone flowing in this podcast. So, seriously, you know, it is a little rarer that there's younger than not males in the space. So it's cool. I'm liking that we're doing this because I don't know about you, but I find that so many friends of mine from, you know, high school or like the college-ish years, they're really starting to feel the modern lifestyle now and the effects of it. And so now they come to us. We were weird before, but now it's pretty damn cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And they're like, ooh, how you feel good? What's that like?
Yeah. Well, men start paying attention when a certain part of their life isn't working so well. You know what I mean? So then they start asking you about the questions and stuff. But I will spare the audience of that detailed conversation. I like to jump into this podcast pretty similarly, like in the same way with every single person to start off. I am fascinated by how people end up in this space, especially when it is a male, because again, it's not really the common route to take this more functional approach or kind of challenge the system, because I love the stuff that you do on Instagram. I mean, you're not afraid to say what you're thinking. I think we need a lot more of this. So how did you get into this type of space as opposed to just becoming, you know, any old doctor out there?
Well, I finished my chiropractic and naturopathic schools and acupuncture school, and then wasn't sure what to do because I was just studying super hard. So I wrote a book, and then after that, I wasn't sure what to do. So I started a nonprofit right before the pandemic started. And the nonprofit was going to be helping lower income people around the Chicagoland area in the United States. And because of the pandemic, we couldn't meet in person to treat people and to educate people. So decided to go towards the online space and found that I could reach thousands more people online than I was ever able to reach in person. And it was a lot cheaper for me personally. I've still invested tons of my own money in towards like equipment and, you know, all the things that we have to do for podcasts or for other things,
right,
but camera gear and video things. And at the end of the day, what I realized is just that there was a lot of fear-based narratives going on in the online space. And I realized that the social media platforms tend to push a lot of fear, a lot of division, a lot of anger. And Facebook has admitted this in recent years. And people who have worked at Facebook have said, yeah, the algorithm actually does do this. Because what they're trying to do is just keep people on the platform as long as possible. And the more they can emotionally trigger you, the more they can get you to comment on posts that are inflammatory, the more that their business succeeds, the more that they keep you on the platform. And so you have to be very mindful about what you surround yourself with. But I was seeing a lot of my mentors either go super into like, you know, team pandemic or like lockdown and take all the shots and do all the things and wear 5 masks. And then I had a bunch of other people, mentors of mine, who were going the opposite way, who were saying like, this is all BS. There is no such thing as the pandemic. Like, this is all overhyped and they're overcounting the deaths and like the shots are going to kill everybody who takes them within 2 years. I'm like, that's totally not true. So I just saw a lot of misinformation on both sides. And so I wanted to be a little bit of like a voice of reason or moderation or calm hope for people to allow them the space to say their minds in a middle ground way that doesn't have to be this polarizing, binary, inflammatory perspective.
Right. Wow. I did not realize that was the motivation for you hopping online at all. Clearly it's working and I think it's being well received because people, they want this. And this is something that I've never used those words, but this is something that we're pushing at FDN in general, especially for our practitioners, because you know how it is. It is very easy, especially for people like myself and like many of our practitioners who have been kind of messed up by Western medicine. It failed us, even if it was really good people behind it, the system still failed us, right? So it's very easy to become dogmatic and say, well, everything there is bad. I'm not going to trust anything. And I completely agree with you on this. This isn't something I've discussed on the show before, but I know they wouldn't mind this. Like in the beginning of the pandemic, I was one of the more people like in my family who was extremely cautious about everything because it's amazing how much like ignorance can surround these topics. Like they're not caring about the masks. They're not caring about washing their hands. And I'm talking like, you know, a week or two in, Brad, like I'm like, we don't know anything about this, guys. Like I thought it was going to be, honestly, my prediction was I thought it was like a super bug, like an antibiotic resistant thing before we knew it was a virus. So I'm like, wow, I've read about this. You know, we know it's coming at some point. We just don't know when. I'm thinking, guys, maybe you want to, you know, use a little extra soap today or something. Like this isn't really the thing to go against. But then, yeah, then we have people, you know, 3 years later, it's like, we've done just about everything you can. If you want the vaccine, they're widely available. We've done every possible measure. The world's pretty much open. And then, you know, you still have people on the other extreme end. And I want to be very clear for those listening. That's not a judgment. I'm just showing that I like to be somewhere in the middle of those two ends of the extremes. And I think that's exactly what you just described. And it's probably why you're taking off because most people are in the middle, right? Like that's actually where they are. That's why we call them extremes because most people are not on either end of that, right?
Correct. Yeah. It's like most people don't want to give every human on earth every single shot that's available to them, or they don't want to give their child like 6 boosters. Right now, like the uptake for children for the boosters is less than 2% because people are realizing What's just admitted this week, finally, even though we knew this reading the research before, was that the shots don't stop you from getting the infection. Mm-hmm. And so they've seen that in children. They're like, well, if the kids got over it once or twice or three times and giving another shot isn't going to help them not catch it again, why would I give it to the kid when you could save those things for the elderly, the people who really need some of that life-saving protection there? So I think there's a lot of gray in a world where the media and other people and social media likes to be very black and white, and people have appreciated that.
Well, yeah, we talk about following the science, which I'm very much an advocate for. I would imagine as a doctor, you were for that as well. I don't know many people that wouldn't be for that. But and that's the thing, too. It's like we get into this stage and we know that kids, I mean, like you said, have virtually no risk of this. This is not a serious thing for kids. I mean, you got to be pretty sick, even by our standards, like to get to a place where COVID could actually seriously affect a child. And then yet again, some people for maybe it's changed a little recently. I do agree with that. But even, you know, 6 months ago, a year ago, we're still taking extreme precautions for children. I'm like, guys, like, do you see children dropping dead like on the street? Like, I mean, these kids are, I'm in schools a lot. I work in schools as well. And like, they're rubbing their faces. The funniest one ever. Dr. Campbell was, I was doing a presentation in a school and I laughed in the middle of it. I couldn't hold it because this kid, it's exactly what you expect from kids in schools using these masks. He has his blue mask on, but he was wearing it as like a headband and had like feathers out of it, like a Native American. I was like, oh yeah, that's like, this is preventing these kids from spreading COVID around. You know, like, I was like, good Lord, man. It was the funniest thing ever. But that's the thing. It's like, these kids are obviously spreading it. Most of them are completely fine. So we should follow that science and not just the dogma promoted by the media one way or the other, one way or the other. So that's where I'm at for that, with that for sure.
Great. Yeah, I think people wanted to just make up their own decisions and act accordingly, yes, rather than sort of being told what to do or forced to do.
Absolutely. Now, I want to rewind just even a little bit, because again, I'm truly really interested in people's stories. That's kind of my big thing. Yeah. And you said, you know, you're getting into chiropractic school, naturopathic medicine of all things. Again, these statistically are more female dominated spaces. Maybe not the chiropractor, I'm not sure, but I know for naturopathic physicians it is. So did you have your own health story or some type of other experience in your family? Because like, I follow your stuff, but I also like to, everyone knows this that listens regularly, I go in with a healthy level of ignorance because I want to almost interact with you as a listener would. Maybe they have no context, right? So how did you even choose that path?
Yeah, I had a couple health issues that were problematic. One big one was a concussion when I was 9, where I had 9 months of short, where my IQ dropped in half. I had, my short-term memory was lost and my personality was basically gone. I went from a grade ahead to a grade behind in school. And after 9 months of seeing 30 plus doctors, I went to a chiropractor who found a dent in my head that was pushing on my brain. And he did cranial work, which only a few chiropractors and osteopathic physicians know how to do. But he basically pulled the dent out of my head, took the pressure off my brain. And within an hour, I was completely back to my normal self. So that was a profound, miraculous event. And then in college, I was doing saxophone performance and pre-med at the same time. And I was getting really congested and sinusy and having tons of sinus infections and tonsil infections. I got my tonsils out. I had sinus surgery. I had 3 surgeries in a period of 2 years. And I wasn't really sure why that was happening. And I went to my doctor. I'm like, you know what? Could food play a role in creating mucus or phlegm or congestion? He's like, no, food doesn't do anything for your health. Like, it's just your genetics. You just have bad tonsils and you just have allergies and there's nothing you can really do about it. You're already taking allergy shots. So just do the surgeries and take these pills and we'll see in 3 months. And I was like, okay, sure. And then I went, I was like, you know what? He might not know everything. He's a little arrogant and I'm not so sure I buy that. And so I just Googled like, what makes mucus? And it was like, first thing was like milk. And I was like, oh shoot, I've been having a quarter gallon of chocolate milk at 5 a.m. but every day before I go play saxophone, and then creating an allergic response that then was making mucus in my sinuses. And as soon as I stopped the milk, days later, my sinuses were perfectly fine and my allergies pretty much resolved. So I was like, okay, modern medicine doesn't know everything. They don't really, I didn't realize that doctors don't learn more than a few hours of nutrition in most medical schools. And so I was, you know, pseudo gaslighted by my doctor, I guess, at that point, just out of his own ignorance. But he meant well, I believe, but because that's what he was taught. But I realized there was more towards healthcare than just being a medical doctor or a surgeon. That's when I decided to not go into pre-med and to go more of the chiropractic, naturopathic route to really get to the root cause, do more nutrition, do more lifestyle medicine, and really help people heal and get healthy rather than just do drugs or surgery. Even though I really liked the idea of doing surgery to help save people's lives, mm-hmm. I feel like I wanted to make a bigger impact and really get to the reason of why their chronic issues were going on.
Okay, got it. So you were always a smart guy, high achieving person. I mean, again, so to be clear with that grade thing, by the way, let's say, I know this might not have been the case for you, but let's say normal for you would have been 10th grade. You were in 11th and the concussion pushed you back to like a 9th.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. That's not fun.
No, it was pretty rough. I remember like getting bullied for being the stupid kid, which was really weird for me.
Yeah, well, right. Because I'm guessing, I mean, it's not particularly easy to skip a grade. I mean, you probably had the exact opposite identity most of your life. Not that you were bullying, but that you were probably known as like a relatively smart person.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it was pretty soul crushing of an injury because like my whole sense of self was blown up to bits, really.
Got it. So yeah, you're taking the pre-med path. I can understand now how this gets altered a little bit. And you've already done it a few times. So I just want to emphasize it because again, I think this is important whenever we're talking to a decent audience size at this point. I like that you say that your doctor pseudo gaslit you and that you still believe he's a good person. I don't know. It's just so extreme when people start acting like all of Western medicine's bad or they're sitting on the fountain of youth. I always say that to people. I'm like, go look at the average doctor. Seriously, go to a family practice near you and you tell me if they even look like they're sitting on the fountain of youth in their back office while giving you, you know, rat poison. And it's really humbling, actually, in a sense, because you almost want to believe that it's the doctors because it'd be easy. Oh, look at that problem. We can just stop using them and we're all saved. It's very humbling in a sense because you realize, oh, when I like fully accepted that at 18, because I mean, I had been sick for like 13 years before this. So there was a long journey beforehand. When I finally accepted this, I said, dang, this problem is so much bigger than I even realized. You know, I wish the problem was just my local doctor. This is way farther out than that. And it gets really convoluted because you say, well, oh, it's the system. Well, what makes up the system? Overall, a lot of great, well-meaning people who have just been taught things that might not be the best. So it's like, who do you point the finger at? How do you stop it? And I think one of the best ways, and this is why I do what I do, is podcasts like this, what you're doing on Instagram. You don't have to condemn that necessarily. You can just shine light on things that are working. And clearly it's, again, well-received based on like the results you're getting and tons of other practitioners and doctors out there who are just sharing their truth. This is what happened to me. This is what happened to people I know. And people receive it very well, I think.
Right. I mean, the system, some people are really pretty negative and I've talked to many doctors. I've taught medical doctors at their med schools, actually, on integrated medicine. And so they'll say like, well, you know, diabetics, they're just like screwed. They have no chance in the heck if they're poor because the water's bad. The food quality is bad. It's really cheap to buy like a 2 liter for a dollar of Coca-Cola when like Fiji water is going to be $5 for the same size. So like, they're just sourced in the tap water in Chicago. 30% of the tap water in Chicago is now tainted with lead. So they're saying like, these people are just like screwed and the system is broken and we don't know what to do because like we wish we could give them health, but they can't afford it. We don't know how to do it. So it's way beyond the doctors. And a lot of doctors are aware of nutrition and the importance of nutrition. It's just, we have a deficiency of practitioners. We don't have enough doctors to go around. We don't have nutritionists to go around. And the air is not super clean, but the water's not clean in Flint, Michigan or a lot of other places. And the food is also a problem to get, like we need to remake healthy soil to remake healthier food. A lot of people just aren't aware of even subtle things like organic food from Mexico is not the same as organic food grown in the United States. So like an organic strawberry, you can grow in Mexico hydroponically in water, not soil. And it has 50% less mineral content and nutritional value of an organic strawberry grown in the United States in soil, but it's cheaper. So the Mexicans are smart, or Americans are smart. They'll go down to Mexico and grow the strawberries in hydroponic conditions in order to then make it for cheaper and resell it back to the United States. They can make a bigger profit for less investment. And the problem is that then you have to eat twice as many strawberries, get twice as many calories with half of the nutritional value. So we wonder why we have this obesity epidemic. It's like even when people are trying to eat organic, sometimes they're not eating the best quality, even when it is what they believe to be high quality food.
Wow. This is, it's such an example of like, don't hate the player, hate the game, right? Because it's you know, if they're a business, they got to do what they got to do. And since we allow this, why wouldn't they do it? You know, of course they're going to go do it. And I mean, I could argue also that you would hope someone has a higher moral standard than that. But at the end of the day, again, business has got to make money, and there's things implicated with this. So it's like, and then what do? Point at them too? Do we point at the people with the water quality control? So there's too much. It's actually overwhelming. And that's why it's awareness. You use that word. It's shining light on these other things so that you can make more informed decisions. It's interesting that you brought up the organic standards too, because that was honestly the first thing that ever got me into this. I remember at 16, there was some, it was a bot account on Twitter. Sounds hilarious, but this is the truth. And it was called Truth or Bot. And it was conspiracy this, conspiracy that, whatever. I'm sure there's a lot of junk on there as well. But one of the things was what Monsanto was doing and like GMOs and stuff. So this was like 11 years ago at this point. And I'm reading this stuff. I'm like, this can't be true. There's no way. And then I search it on Google and I find the news reports. I'm like, this company's crazy. Like, how do they still exist, let alone eventually getting bought out by Bayer, which you guys really got to think about why a pharmaceutical company would want to buy that. They either have a whole new strategy and they know that this is going to save the world and their pharmaceuticals are going to go out of business, or they're smart and they know that these things might correlate a lot more than we think. But I remember seeing that and I was like gung-ho organic. I'm like, all right, well, at the very least, I got to do that. And sure, you'll eliminate the GMOs at the very least, hopefully. But you try to do that. And then I realized over time, I'm much more concerned now with local in a sense than I am organic. Now, that doesn't mean there's not really crappy local, but I go to I'm really blessed. There's a health food chain up here near me. I'm in Pennsylvania. There's about five of the stores, been in the family for 30 years, all family owned. And they'll put these labels on like the food and stuff. And the produce says within 100 miles, they know the farmers, like their actual relationships here. And so of course I would like to know them personally. That'd be even better. But I worked for this place for a while when I was getting started in my young adulthood in my career. And I realized just how serious the relationships were with these places that they're getting from. And I'm like, I love that. So yes, my beef isn't always 100% organic, but I would take that any day over the Walmart or organic beef that they're getting there. A lot of times it's the local quality over just these labels that seem really good, but mean seemingly less and less as we move on here. You know what I mean? I feel like it means even less than 10 years ago, like organic's gotten worse almost.
Yeah, for sure. I have a patient who's an organic apple farmer. And, okay. Or grower, I guess. I don't know if you farm apples, but either way, his apple trees in an orchard and he's like, you know, sells the apples. And, he had a really interesting illness, which was actually, he had a mold inside of his body that was coming from the apple trees. And he was just eating like 20 apples a day. And he was just putting in more sugar that was feeding the internal yeast fungal mold imbalance in his body. And once he actually stopped the apples, his fungal issues on his skin and that were affecting his brain and causing fatigue went away like within days, which was really crazy. So that was an interesting story of like how sometimes you just like take away the toxic factor or the aggravating factor or like an infection real fast and someone can just like snap reverse back. But he taught me while I was with him, as most time I'm learning from my patients throughout the day, he taught me that even though you could have your apple orchard be labeled as organic, doesn't mean that you're not necessarily spraying some type of herbicide or pesticide onto those apples. They're just organic approved sprays.
Right.
And some of the organic approved ones are not necessarily healthier than some of the other herbicides or pesticides they would be spraying. So he was basically trying to find the best bang for his buck. And he too is just meaning well. He's like, if I don't use any, I'm going to lose my entire crop. And then I won't be able to feed my family. I won't be able to have an income and I won't be able to have apples at all. So he's like, I have to use something. So I'm going to use the one that is basically the best bang for my buck. That's going to be the most effective while not affecting our health as much as possible. But yeah. Similar to like a business, they just have to make those executive decisions of like, what's going to give us the ability to feed as many people as possible while not making huge health sacrifices. But I think the problem with a corporation is that if someone were to make an ethical choice where they're going to say, we're going to put people over profit, they'll get kicked off that board of directors because there's someone else, their primary directive, the way it's just the way it's set up is that they have to choose profit first. They have to choose growing their company. And if there's something that's ethically important, but it's going to cost the company money, then that board of directors is failing. They're losing. And so they need to be replaced. So I think it's just the way the system is set up for, you can blame capitalism, you could blame the corporations, but I don't think it's truly that these people mean poorly. I've actually worked with people who are consulting and coaching with these executive boards of these big companies that we're talking about, and they are trying to do well. It's just they also have certain layers of priority they have to deal with as a company.
Right. Yeah. And it goes back to the same thing, right? Like bad apple farmer or grower, who knows? Yeah. Probably not, right? Just a person trying to feed their family, just like the rest of us. So, and that's the thing too. It's like, it would be, I think, honestly, and how old are you? Can I ask?
32.
Okay. So then in our generation of 27, like a lot of people do point to the capitalism, corporatism type of thing. And again, I would love it if it was that simple. I don't think that's the case. I think there's bigger things here that would exist in many different systems. And so again, for me, it starts with awareness, because I'm not even pretending that I have the solution to all of it. I don't think you are either. This is really complicated. There's millions of people out there, incomprehensible numbers of human beings running around in this country alone, let alone the world. And they all have different lives, different places where they're from. So it's not so simple, but at the very least, I think I'm big on like what I call leveling the playing field. And what I mean is, a level playing field is not when you or I walks into the doctor's office with a health issue and are told, okay, like let's say it's anxiety, right? You know, okay, you could take the Xanax. Okay, great. And Xanax really works for anxiety. Now it might cause side effects. I get that. Not best long term, but still it does work for anxiety. But I'm never also told, hey, well, have you ever considered like neuroinflammation and how that's now correlated pretty strongly with anxiety symptoms. And if you change your diet, you could in theory reduce the inflammation, right? That's not a level playing field. But when we have that, then to me, it's like, I don't really care what you do, to be dead honest. Take the Xanax, take this. It's not my decision to say one way or another, but man, I wish someone would have told me, and probably many of our practitioners feel this way. They probably wish someone would have told them the other options when they were there. And then again, it comes back to the doctors don't even know the other options half the time. And 90% of their clients are demanding the exact opposite. Like they want the quick fix and the pill. I've had doctors on here, like traditional MD doctors, and yeah, they've said this is half the issue. Where the patients are coming to them. And because we allow direct-to-consumer pharmaceutical advertising on our TV stations in America, which I've said this before on the show, so I apologize if it's boring to people who've heard it before, but sure, certainly there's going to be a new listener today. Only two countries in the world allow that, guys. It's us and New Zealand. The rest of the countries of the world, even China, does not think that that's okay to be doing. And so then you got Sally coming into the doctor's office and saying, oh, I want this thing because the TV made it look good. And then the doctor's in a really weird position because he's got or she's got 10 minutes with this person, and you can either argue with them for 10 minutes or you just give them the prescription and get the heck out, right? This is really complicated.
Right. And it's like a lot of them will just give them the prescription, get out, because they want to spend that extra 8 minutes with someone else who, you know, could be better educated, or they could spend their time helping. It's like it comes down to a practicality. It's like if you could really use that time with another family, and this is a losing battle, you just like lose that battle and use the time elsewhere to help someone else.
Yes. So one more question about your personal story with the health side. You had talked about, you know, you asked your doctor at the time, hey, can foods, you know, maybe make my, sinuses a little clogged or produce more mucus, whatever you might have worded it as. What I'm curious is, like, again, you're obviously a smart guy, so maybe this was just genuinely a thought like that. But most people, I've met super smart people that are never connecting the dots between the food and the health symptom connection. So my last question there is there any other correlation? Like, did you have like a mom or dad growing up that was into this? Or was it truly just this thought that, you know, out of nowhere, kind of like, you know, bam, intuition, maybe it's my food doing this.
You know, I have a dad who's a dentist and a mother who's a nurse. And my mom was more into the natural side for many reasons. I think because she had some car injuries where chiropractic helped her, and that kind of like opened her into the gateway drug of natural healthcare. But I think at the time, it was just a friend. It was like a sheer luck of the draw. I had a friend who had told me that citrus food was making him congested. And so I think what I was doing was like the week before, I was like, well, that's interesting. Like, why would like a tangerine or a clementine, why would that make him congested? Like, that's really weird that food could actually do that. And then I think like a week later, it like kicked me in the head. And I was like, wait, if food could make him congested, and I'm drinking a quarter gallon of chocolate milk, maybe that's doing it. Like, maybe my food also matters.
Right. Okay, cool. The reason I hone in on that question is because it's something I ask every time. I want to know, how can we replicate this for other people? That is, I've had family members, maybe it's been the case for you probably in a certain way. Like my aunt, she was in the gifted program at our local school district. So this is an objectively brilliant person. And she ended up passing away from cancer. She was not willing to make a dang change. I was already well within the space. I politely sent over some stuff. I'm like, hey, if you ever want to talk, like, I'm not trying to, but you don't want to bother someone in that state either. Like, that is a really serious thing. It was a brain cancer. But it lasted for like 3 years, and there was ample opportunity to do some things like this. And the last thing I'm doing is condemning someone for making choices that ended up leading to that. Clearly she didn't want to die. But my point is, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, this person is so smart, but this system has her so trapped in this that she's like afraid almost, she's paralyzed to go away from anything else. So I want to know, how can we replicate this before they're in that paralyzing fear? And Dr. Campbell, honestly, the main thing I hear, and I don't know if this is the case with your patients, most people don't really give me any other answer other than it was a gut feeling. Like, that's, they didn't even have like a thing. They just eventually said, you know what, this doesn't make sense. Now, how do I replicate that for someone else? Because there's all different IQ levels giving me that answer. So I don't know how we give that to someone else necessarily, but believe it or not, that's the number one answer I get, is I just knew something didn't make sense.
Yep. I think that's it. At the end of the day, we all have the answer within ourselves, and we have to ask ourselves, is this really the root cause? Is this really dealing with the root problem of why I'm having these health concerns or these issues or these diagnoses? Does the label make sense? Does the syndrome make sense? Or is there something deeper going on? And at our deepest heart of hearts, when we're being really courageously honest with ourselves, we know what's causing most of our health issues. We know it's most likely us that's the problem. Mm-hmm. And it's just educating people on that fact that, like, hey, you might have some responsibility in what happens to you. And even if you didn't know why this happened, you might be able to help yourself fare better if you make certain choices now. It's like, even if you didn't, you're not the one who punched you in the face that caused your eye to pop out of your head. Like, you still have a role in saying how your other eye that you still have left is going to fare. So you could get diabetes, you could get glaucoma, and then you could get eye surgery and cataracts and macular degeneration, or you could eat really well and keep your other eye super healthy. And so, like, stuff happens, life happens, diagnoses happen, but accepting responsibility for what you can do is difficult, but profoundly empowering to people. And they want control. They want to be in charge. It's just a little tricky to start to tell people, like, hey, maybe those food choices aren't the best. Maybe you can start up-leveling and doing a little bit better this week and then this month. And then next year you can do even better. And so I think people get overwhelmed because sometimes they feel a little too hard on themselves. Like, there's no chance for me. I eat McDonald's every day, you know? Right. And so they're overwhelmed by the thought of having to cook for themselves or just do a little bit. But if you just start really small, you can regain control of your health again quite rapidly.
And this is an interesting point, because I'm curious if you see this with your clients. I think one of the biggest barriers too is a lack of belief sometimes. And that's why I love getting to share these stories, because, you know, it's one thing to say, all right, let's like eat this way. I do think, and myself included, it's very hard for the average person to conceptualize. Oh, because there's no, it's not, what am I trying to say? It's not linear, and it's not necessarily objective in the sense that, oh no, you have to eat this way for 30 days and this gets better. Whereas like, if we give them a pill, there's an expectation of like an SSRI, right? What do they say? 2 to 3 weeks, you should start feeling something here. Xanax, no, first time you should start feeling this. I take an ibuprofen. Yeah, 45 minutes. We can't really do this with, and I'm oversimplifying it, of course, but like, oh, go paleo. Oh yeah, 30 days, everything's gonna be fine. Do you think sometimes that, are you experiencing this with clients and patients that they just don't even necessarily believe, or maybe you just think this and they don't acknowledge it themselves, but they don't even believe that this can work for them?
Yeah, that is, it's a big educational hurdle for us as natural healthcare practitioners, is it's drastically more effective, but way slower. It's like, if we were able to like modify the weather somehow and like reduce the fog, right? And like, you live in a really foggy city and there's always, like, you're in London and there's always fog, and then one day there's 50% less fog, you probably wouldn't even notice that much. Or if there's 20% less fog, you're not going to notice. But if every day there's 10% less fog, then after a month, you're going to feel like you're in a brand new place. And that's kind of how dietary changes go. It's just that slow, steady peeling back of the suffering or the fog or gaining more clarity, more energy when you wake up like a month or 3 months later and you're like, wow, I'm not falling asleep after lunch anymore. Wow, I can actually sleep through the night, or like that itchiness is gone, or like that wart I had, where'd that go? That's interesting. So a lot of these subtle changes, you just have to trust people like you and me, or trust the practitioners to say, okay, this is going to work. I believe in my practitioner. I have hope that I can get better. I know that my body's loves me. It's doing the best it can for me. It's innately intelligent. It's powerful. It's strong. It's made to heal itself. Even if I treat it like crap, I can still get a cut and it's still going to heal, even if all I'm eating is fried chicken. And so we can really do a lot, and our bodies are trying to do a lot for us, and they're doing the best they can with what they have. And if we give them really, if we give our bodies really good raw material, it will generally treat us really well in return. But that's why I never really start with dietary changes with people, because it is such a big hurdle. I almost always tell them, like, suggest that that's going to be something we're about to do, but I'll start with B vitamins, vitamin D, adaptogens, magnesium, like 4 or 5 supplements that I know are going to make a shift the first day they take them or the first time. So I'll give them some pretty strong herbs or strong vitamins, because like, I know if you give someone like a B12 shot or high mega doses of B complexes, like they're going to feel a little different. So that's how I hook them in, is like, give them the hope in terms of like, here's what I'm giving you. Here's what you're going to experience. You're going to pee out like really bright yellow, and I'm going to give you Manifesta and you're going to pee brown. I'm going to give you Beets and you're going to pee red. And they're like, wow, this doctor knows what he's talking about. Like, he's giving me stuff. I notice instant changes. This is cool. And they start feeling it, and then they get more hope. They get more buy-in, and then they're willing to do some of the bigger lifestyle changes once they have that rapport with you.
I 100,000% agree with this, because this is what I've seen with clients. I always look for like the easy wins in the beginning, because people, they're actually relatively fair. If you can just, especially if their needle has not been moving in years, if you get that needle moving 10%, you can get someone locked in for a year after that. They just need to know that something that you're saying is going to work, because they've probably been through the ringer a lot. They've been to a lot of different places. We always call it like the cycle of trial and error here, right? Where they went to this doctor, this pill, and then they do the natural cycle of trial and error, where they are now at the supplement store, or the supplement section in the health food store, and they're trying this and that and talking to the person who does it. And yeah, maybe they get 2% better at best. So if they can see the thing that motivates them, it's good to go. I mean, that happened with me. I mean, I had severe cystic acne. Switching to organic moved that needle quite a bit. Now, it took me years to actually get to a place where I was comfortable with the skin. But at the same time, I had motivation the whole time, because I knew, I'm like, all right, I'm onto something here, because nothing's worked in over 10 years. And then I switched my diet and I'm still kind of eating crappy food. I was just eating organic crap, and just that little bit less of a toxic load, I guess, really helped me a lot, because the skin's a detox organ, right? So something worked there. I want to transition into your work a little bit for the last 16, 17 minutes here, so people know what you're doing and where they can find you, of course. And first things first, you're both in person and online. Is that correct, or am I wrong with that?
Yeah, I mean, I teach online. I have an online membership to help educate people. But my primary, 50-60 hour a week thing is treating patients. So I do 4 or 5 days a week. I do 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. and see a bunch of patients in half hour to hour long visits. And I do chiropractic, acupuncture, NET, which is a stress reduction technique, and a lot of lab testing and educating and coaching and things like that to help people get healthier. So that's my like true love, is I run an integrated holistic clinic with about 4 or 5 practitioners and 4 or 5 staffs just north of Chicago. We're not currently taking new patients, but there's a wait list on our social media links. But so because that's been so busy, that's why I started the nonprofit, to try to like teach more doctors, teach more patients how to be healthy, to be their own best doctor as much as they are able. There's like this paradox in the natural health community. It's like, you are your own best doctor, but he who is his own doctor is a fool. So it's always good to have some coach or some outside source to run some tests or give you some perspective, while also knowing that you have your own answers inside of you at the same time.
I've never heard that in all the years in the space. And I really like that. That makes a lot of sense, because I even do that myself. Like we have a system here at FDN where there's like the medical director program, because not all of us are doctors. In fact, I would bet that the majority aren't, but we have doctors on our team. And then we have other practitioners that, I mean, they might as well be because of the amount of knowledge that they know. And so, yeah, whenever I run labs on myself, it's like, all right, cool. Like, I know what this is, but why would I not get their set of eyes looking at my labs as well? Like, I want that, you know? I think that makes a lot of sense. And I knew that you were going in person somewhere every day because I always see you doing the convertible videos, which I think is awesome. And this just shows your dedication to the space because you do not strike me at all as a guy that buys a convertible to be flashy. I feel like you bought this just to get the light exposure in the morning for such busy days.
Pretty much, yeah. And I got it because my dog like loved it. I rented one and put my dog in the back and he was like, that's part of why people watches. He's like in the back, like lifting his head up in the windstream and like having a good time. And I bought a cheaper car because I didn't want a car payment. And then I sold that car for a cheaper convertible. This is like an old grandma Toyota Camry Solara from 2007. So I just kept getting older, cheaper cars to pay off some of my debt sooner. Cause yeah, I didn't want to do the flashy thing, but he loves it. I like the convertible. It's a fun way to go to work and, yeah, I just realized like I was so busy, but I'm like, you know, I can spend that 5 minutes instead of listening to like a couple songs or calling a friend. Like I could just teach something and see if people like it. And sure enough, people like
it. I was about to say, like that 5 minutes ended up being kind of fruitful, huh?
Yeah.
It's amazing how just switching certain, like I use my car as like a classroom a lot, right? And just like switching those simple things. I mean, it makes all the difference, especially when you add it up over a year, 2 years, 3 years. It's the compound effect. So yeah, no, that's cool because I think we got to start selling the fun things of this space more. Like I'm telling everyone to get a convertible. They're like, I got to do that for my health. I'm like, yes. They're like, okay. All of a sudden the checkbook starts coming out, right? They can afford that. They couldn't afford the supplements, but the convertible they got.
Totally.
with that said though, who are the, I know you have a wait list. So I understand that, but who are the main clients that you're seeing? Like, is there certain patterns? Is there a certain demographic? Who typically comes to your place?
It might be like you as like a health detective myself too. It's sort of like, the people who have been to 10, 20 practitioners and can't really figure things out. It's a lot of people who post-concussion people where there's not enough functional neurologists or functional type healers to go around who do craniosacral or who do quantum neurology or stuff with like cold laser and acupuncture to help those people. So it's a lot of the chronic complex illness type people. I still see families who have like colds and flus and do all the primary care medicine type stuff. And that's typical chiropractor, acupuncture type things. But the bread and butter is typically the people who need a diagnosis or who have a diagnosis, but have made zero headway on it.
Okay, cool. And so you said, we already kind of talked about first thing normally for people is going to be these supplements that will help them feel better quick. So they know, okay, this isn't a quack guy. This is something that's going to work. He guessed the color of my pee. Like he knew what this was going to be. I like the guy. I'm impressed now. And that is not a small point because if you do not tell someone that their pee is going to change with B vitamins and you mess up with that, I've learned my lesson. I'll put it that way because they start freaking out like, oh my God, what did this guy give me? It's like, totally, you are so good. It's not even funny. Like, that's the last thing you got to worry about. But okay, so you do that with them. And then you mentioned that you utilize lab testing as well. Is that more individualized for the individual? Or is there a system or set of labs that you typically like to run? Because here, and we're open to different perspectives, we typically do go with an approach of like a set amount of labs because we think it kind of covers so much that we do have great results with it. But of course, there's other people having success with very different systems. So is it more individualized or a system?
A little of both. I have some basic markers, blood markers that I'll always check on everybody. So inflammatory markers like HSCRP and homocysteine. I'll check some basic like CBC, CMPs if people don't have that. Things that they'll get normally run. And then depending on their case, I'll tweak it. But I'll always run some inflammatory, some immune, some autoimmune markers, because that picks up stuff in a large amount of people who don't realize they're having an autoimmune response, and hormone testing. So I'll almost always run a full thyroid panel, some DHEA, cortisol, testosterone, some for women, some female sex hormones. So I'll run those in just about everybody. And then depending on what issues they'll have, I'll add on extra tests on top of that, whether it's urine, salivary testing, functional gut testing, that type of stuff.
Okay, fair enough. So we have like the set stuff that most people are probably going to receive. And then depending on the case, we might branch out. And that makes sense because, you know, sometimes less is more. And especially with how much this stuff costs, of course, this is not like insurance-based stuff yet. Amazing how the stuff that works isn't what is covered by insurance, but not the point. It's just, you know, you want to kind of be respectful to the client and patient when we can and try to do that stuff. I also love that you measure homocysteine. I appreciate that because I have a family history on my dad's side of like some kind of heart stuff. And I was already like doing really well in the last several years. And then I ran a full blood panel. Like I ran like $200 worth of blood work on me. I wanted everything, full thyroid, all this stuff. And homocysteine was on there. And was it extraordinarily high? No, but it was actually borderline high even for the Western range. And I felt good. So I know how correlated that is with certain heart issues down the line. And I was so thankful to have found that at that time. Just be like, all right, cool. I can get this addressed and under control like long before this is an issue. There is admittedly, and I have no problem saying it, even in the functional space, there is not many people looking at those markers, not nearly enough, I find. Like some people don't even know what the heck that is.
Yeah, it's pretty wild, but it won the Nobel Prize in medicine a few decades ago. There's a book.
I didn't know that, admittedly.
Oh, won the H-Factor Solution is a book that talks all about it. For people who are like really curious or who have high homocysteine and can't get it down, it's a great book to dive into. But yeah, it's so important. It's such a simple solution for most people to just take some specific B vitamins or tweak a few things cellularly in your body. And that marker will drastically cut your risk of cancer and heart disease and dementia and all types of other preventable illnesses.
Cool. All right. So we do the preliminary stuff, get the needle moving for them. They're feeling better. Now we're running some labs. How long are people typically working with you, especially since they have to come in person? Is this like a few months or what are the programs typically?
I don't sign people up for programs. It's more just like if they want to come back, great. I usually recommend sure. At the beginning, people come back every 1 to 3, 4 weeks. If mm-hmm. I find I stretch them out more than a month, they're not going to come back because the scheduling and logistics and they lose interest. But typically they're coming in for like 3 to 4 to 6 months, depending on the problem, making some big changes and then ideally getting out so I can get some new patients in. But I do have patients, I'll tell people this, like if you really like coming, it's really good for you to get regular care, whether that's weekly or monthly or seasonally, whatever you enjoy or you find valuable for your health. The more you can do, likely the better. And that's the thing about some of the hands-on healing with chiropractic or acupuncture is it does keep you at tip-top shape, kind of like working out. You can't expect to like work out one time and then keep huge muscles. You can't expect to get adjusted or get acupuncture and stay balanced the rest of your life. So it's good to go back and keep those muscles strong, whether that's chiropractic or massage or meditation. It's good to find something that you're doing on a consistent basis. I think working out is probably better than seeing a healer, but seeing a healer at least seasonally is really helpful for most people just to get that outside external feedback. Same as like a coach, like you wouldn't be a cross country runner or a football player and just practicing by yourself the whole time without a coach. You need someone to like look at you and tell you like, hey, did you know your foot's turning this way? Or you can turn this way. You're a little bit off over here. So it helps to have that external guide to give you some feedback and awareness. Cause really the first step in healing is always awareness. As you've mentioned yes. a number of times. And then from that, your ego says like, ooh, I don't like that they told me I suck in this way. So how can I do better? I don't like that my water in Chicago is probably tainted with lead or fluoride or chlorine. How can I do better? And from that, even if you don't have the instant solution, you'll Google it. You'll start to do some of your own research and you'll figure out how to make that problem go away.
100%. Now with your work schedule, you've worked with quite a few people. It sounds like I always love to ask this towards the end of the show. And I just want to know, to the degree that you're able to share, cause I know there's privacy stuff, that's fine. But what are like maybe one or two of some of the top testimonials or client stories that you have of people just, you know, coming to you? Because in our world, man, yeah, people come at the end of their line and you could really change some things for them. So I'm curious.
You know, we've had a lot of different like mysterious conditions go away. We've had ones where people have MS that's no longer there. We have conditions where people have had things from like Hashimoto's and Crohn's and colitis just mysteriously disappear. Doctors aren't sure how, but we know it's like lifestyle and diet, nutrition and all the things and stress reduction. One of the coolest cases I had though was a patient who was coming in, and I wasn't even really sure why they were coming in. A dad was bringing in his daughter where the daughter was having some chronic health conditions. And the daughter wasn't really getting a lot better. Or like she would make improvements, but then she would just kind of like revert back. And what ended up actually happening was one day I was like, well, if you're not taking any of my suggestions and your prom isn't getting better, like why do you keep returning? And it was basically because the trying to remember the story so I can tell it perfectly, but the father, you know, like what happened was the father was actually bringing his daughter in to learn by osmosis. And a lot of the teachings that I was teaching the daughter of like stress reduction techniques and other things like that was helping the dad more than it was helping the daughter, who is the patient. So the dad was learning how to regulate his own emotional stress and his own trauma. And the daughter was like, you know, I'm not getting better per se, but my dad is no longer beating me. And that was like, oh, wait a second. Like, I didn't know that was happening. They didn't tell me that was happening, but the dad was dealing with some major liver issues and anger issues. And I've been talking to the daughter about her liver and anger issues, but the dad was able to resolve his own liver by stopping drinking, getting less angry and ragey, and not abusing his daughter. Now, they didn't come back because I think the dad was too embarrassed at what
his
daughter had revealed. And I pray to God that the daughter is safe. And I actually have contacted them since, and they're in a good space because I know some of their family. But it was one of those moments where I'm like, wow, sometimes we think we're helping our patient, but we're actually helping the people with them or their family around them. And even if they're not better, that awareness will level up everybody in their sphere. And that could be a complete game changer for their entire family.
Wow. All right. That's a heck of a testimonial. I like that. Yeah. I mean, it's a sad story, obviously, originally, but and I can get the embarrassment that would come, you know, especially if the daughter says that. But man, I mentioned in the beginning, I work with kids. To think about how that probably changed the entire trajectory of that young woman's life, I mean, that's pretty serious stuff, especially in today's world. Like, that's not, there's nothing normal about that. We know it's not good. We know it's not helpful, right? You don't do that to kids, ideally.
No.
And so that's amazing. I've never, in all the testimonials I ask for, I mean, you could imagine this, I guess, that's never one that has come up in even kind of. So very interesting. Now, where can people find you? Please mention the Instagram, because guys, I don't care if you're a practitioner and you're just listening for the story and, you know, like you're already doing well on your health journey. This is an Instagram you want to follow. It is very entertaining. It's very educational. So where can people find you on social and then in person? And then where can they find the wait list? Like, give it all to us.
Yep. So Instagram is Dr. Campbell Cares, DrCampbellCares. Dr. Campbell Cares. And on there, there's a link in the bio that has links to like YouTube and Telegram and some other channels we're on, and our Campbell Care membership, which is the website for that is CampbellCareMembership.com. And we have courses that are a fraction the price of other super expensive courses. And on thyroid, on gut dysbiosis, on some comprehensive foundations of health, and like weekly Q&A calls and things like that. So we have a membership there. We have the a podcast that's coming out in January that's going to be on our website and on the Instagram. So we'll have information there for people. And then I have a book as well called Do I Have Adrenal Fatigue, which is on Amazon for purchase too.
Cool. All right. I want to finish up with the signature question on the Health Detective Podcast. And it's always fun interviewing someone who's so well-versed, because you never know where they're going to go with this one. But the question I have for you to finish up is, if I could give you, in this case, a magic wand and you could wave it and you get every single person in this world to do one thing for their health. So that could be you actually got them to start one thing, or you could get everyone to stop doing one thing. What is the one thing Dr. Campbell would get them to do?
I would get them to stop doing their drugs every day and start doing them with more intention. So that includes caffeine, alcohol, marijuana, unless they're prescribed a drug. I think most people are over consuming drugs on a daily basis, and that's leaving them not truly authentic to who they are. And they're covering up a lot of their physical and emotional health problems with waking up early with caffeine in the morning or using alcohol or marijuana to go to bed. And it leads to a perpetual state of stress and then eventual burnout. And then that leads to a plethora of health issues. So if I could do one thing for everybody, it would get them to stop doing their drugs every day and start truly enjoying and valuing when they do them on a less frequent basis.
not bad. 180 something episodes and no one has ever given that one. So thank you for the fresh material. We appreciate it. And thanks for just coming on with me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right, guys, that'll do it for today's episode with Dr. Bradley Campbell. I hope you guys enjoyed this one. It was pretty cool. We ended up touching on a lot of different topics. And if you listen regularly, you know I love the conversational style of interviewing. And that's because you have some predictability to it, but there's a lot of novelty in the conversation since you really don't know which way it's going to go. And Dr. Campbell and I touched on probably four or five major topics. So I hope you guys did enjoy this. Please go give him a follow. He is someone actually delivering value consistently on Instagram and other social media platforms. And then finally, if you're considering maybe doing work like myself, other FDN practitioners, or Dr. Campbell, but you don't have the time to go to naturopathic medicine school, you might want to consider the FDN course. And how you can check the FDN course out for free is by going to fdntraining.com/tryfdn. That's fdntraining.com/tryfdn. It'll let you try the course completely for free. No credit card is required. I will be back soon with yet another interview, but until then, please take care.